Hawk and Fisher studied the slender redhead before them.
A premonition about William? Do you think he's in danger?
Yes. I'm Visage. I'm a witch. It's my job to protect William from magical threats. He should be safe enough here in Gaunt's house. I've never seen so many defensive spells. The place is crawling with them. And yet, there's a feeling in the air. It worries me. I've given William extra protection, but still...
Have you sensed anything in particular?
Nothing definite. Somebody here, or close by, is planning a death. And the victim is either William or someone connected with him. That's all I can get.
Have you told Blackstone?
Of course. He isn't taking the threat seriously enough.
Somebody here or close by. Maybe we should check the grounds.
I suggested that to Gaunt. He said no one could get into the grounds or the house without his knowing. Unless you do something to stop it, someone is going to die in this house. Tonight.
She turned suddenly and walked away. Hawk and Fisher watched her go.
Great start to the party.
Isn't it?
Did you notice that she never did get around to explaining why Catherine Blackstone was acting out of character?
Yeah, that was interesting.
They looked at each other a moment, shrugged, and scooped more of the fruit cordial from the punch bowl.
Who the hell would be desperate enough to attack Blackstone in Gaunt's house? All right, Gaunt isn't the most powerful sorcerer I've ever met, but I'd put him right up there in the top 10. I certainly wouldn't cross him without a damn good reason.
Right. If nothing else, our potential murderer must be pretty damn confident. Or crazy. Or both.
Or he knows something we don't. Think we should say something to Blackstone?
Not yet. What could we tell him that he doesn't already know? Besides, like you said, who could get to him here?
Well, there's no place so well defended that someone determined enough can't find a way in. After all, it might not be a direct attack. It could be something that's been planned in advance.
A prearranged spell or curse. Or maybe they've poisoned the food.
Or the drink.
They looked at their empty glasses.
Nah. The witch said someone was planning a death tonight, not several. And anyway, Gaunt would surely be able to detect the presence of anything poisonous. Same for any spells.
I suppose so. All right, poison is out. But a direct attack seems even more unlikely. In order to get to Blackstone, an assassin would have to get past all of Gaunt's defenses, and then fight his way past us. There are assassins that good in the Low Kingdoms, but I don't really think Blackstone's important enough to warrant their attentions. No, I think a magical attack of some kind has to be the most likely.
But according to the witch, this house is covered with defensive spells.
Yeah. Nothing's ever simple, is it? You know, Isabel, just once I think I'd like to work on a case that was simple and straightforward. Just for a change.
So, what are we going to do?
Stay close to Blackstone and watch everyone else very closely.
Sounds like an excellent idea.
Hawk and Fisher looked him over coldly, and Dormant didn't miss the way their hands fell naturally to the weapons at their sides. He felt a sudden chill run down his spine. As a political advisor, Dormant mixed with some hard people in his time, but one look into Hawk's cold eye was enough to convince him that everything he'd heard about Hawk and Fisher was true. These people were dangerous. He smiled at them calmly and hoped they'd put the sweat on his brow down to the heat.
Allow me to introduce myself, Graham Dormant, William's political advisor.
Hawk nodded politely.
Oh, I know who you two are. Everyone in Haven's heard of Hawk and Fisher.
Fame, at last.
Honest guards are as rare as honest politicians. That's why I particularly asked for you as William's bodyguards.
The witch says that Blackstone's in danger. She thinks that someone's going to try and kill him tonight.
I wouldn't take Visage too seriously, Captain Fisher. She's good enough at her job, but she sees threats in every shadow.
But Blackstone does have enemies.
Oh, certainly. What politician doesn't? And William's policies aren't exactly aimed at making him popular with the vested interests who make this city the cesspool it is. But when all is said and done, he's safe here. Gaunt was telling me about some of his defenses earlier, and I can assure you that nothing and nobody gets into this house unless Gaunt says so. Believe me, William has absolutely nothing to worry about tonight.
Unless one of his guests turns out to be an assassin.
Captain Fisher, everyone at this party is a friend of William's and has been for years. Not one of them has anything to gain by his death. The only people at this party that I can't personally vouch for are you and Captain Hawk. And your reputations suggest you lack the taste for assassination work.
Yeah. The pay's good, but the working conditions are lousy.
Fisher nodded solemnly. Dormant looked from one to the other, and then smiled reluctantly.
Captain Hawk, Captain Fisher, right now, William's under a lot of pressure. His political opponents are doing their best to sabotage his new bill, and there have been a few death threats. The usual anonymous rubbish. I thought having you two around for the next few days might make him feel a little more secure. All you have to do is stick with him, and don't let anyone within arm's reach of him unless I vouch for them. All right?
Sure. I've done bodyguarding work before.
Good. You do know you'll be staying the night here, along with the rest of us.
Yeah, we didn't have time to pack a bag, but no doubt Gaunt can provide us with what we need.
Of course. I'll have a word with him.
The doorbell rang, and Gaunt went into the hall to answer it. Hawk frowned slightly.
Why does a sorcerer like Gaunt answer his own door? Doesn't he have any servants?
Gaunt doesn't trust servants. Afraid they might be after his secrets, I suppose. Industrial espionage is rife among magicians.
Secrets? What do you know about Gaunt, Sir Dormant?
Not much. He's a private man. William knows him better than I do. There are rumors he used to be a sorcerer to the king until they had a falling out. The rumors don't say what they might have argued about. Gaunt's a quiet sort, usually. Don't think I've ever known him to raise his voice in anger. On the other hand, you know what he did in the hook.
Yeah.
Fisher scowled, her hand idly caressing the pommel of her sword.
I don't trust sorcerers.
Not many people do. But Gaunt is no threat to William. They've been friends for years.
He broke off as Gaunt came back into the parlor, accompanied by a tall, wiry man in his late 20s. He had a shock of long, dark hair and a thick, curly beard, so that most of his face was hidden from casual view. He smiled easily, but the smile didn't reach his eyes. He was dressed in the latest fashion and wore it well. Considering that the latest fashion included tightly cut trousers and a padded jerkin with a chin-high collar, this was no mean achievement. It would have been easy to dismiss him as a dandy if it hadn't been for the sword that hung at his left hip in a well-worn scabbard. Blackstone and his wife went over to greet the newcomer.
Now there's a man you can distrust. Edward Bowman, William's right-hand man. A brilliant politician with a first-class mind. Watch him. The man's a rat.
Hawk frowned and started to ask him more, but Dormant was already walking away, heading back to the witch visage. Hawk looked back at Bowman. Gaunt and Blackstone were deep in conversation, leaving Catherine chatting with Bowman. Hawk's eye narrowed as he watched them. There was nothing specific he could put his finger on, but there was something about the way Catherine and Bowman were talking together. They were too friendly. They smiled too much. Their concentration was too intense. And they touched each other politely, but too often.
Yeah. They're certainly glad to see each other, aren't they?
Probably just good friends.
Sure. Sure.
Gaunt moved into the hall toward the door. Blackstone moved over to join Bowman and Catherine. Hawk watched closely, but couldn't see any obvious signs of tension between them. They all smiled a little too brightly and too often, but then they were politicians. Hawk looked away.
I assume the bell means more guests. That's all we need, more suspects to watch.
You worry too much.
Fisher poured herself more of the fruit cordial.
Look, all we've got to do is keep the man alive for the next 3 days until his bill becomes law. After that, the pressure will be off and he won't need us anymore. Surely we can keep him out of trouble for 3 days.
I don't like coming onto a case unprepared. We don't know enough about what's going on here, and we certainly don't know enough about the people involved. Catherine Blackstone is acting out of character. Visage knows why, but won't tell us. Instead, she tells us that Counselor Blackstone is in danger, in one of the best defended houses in the city. Blackstone's political advisor warns us about Blackstone's right-hand man, who turns out to be very friendly with the counselor's wife. I've got a bad feeling about this, Isabel.
You're always getting bad feelings.
And I'm usually right.
We've had a long, hard day, my love. It's just the tiredness talking, that's all. Blackstone is perfectly safe here. We're just window dressing. Now have a drink and relax a little, okay?
Okay.
Hawk smiled fondly at Fisher.
You're always this sensible one. What would I do without you?
Beats the hell out of me. Now relax. Everything's going to be fine.
Gaunt came back into the parlor, and Hawk's heart sank. He knew the middle-aged couple with the sorcerer only too well. Lord and Lady Hightower were a prominent part of Haven's high society. They moved in all the right circles and knew all the right people. In a very real sense, they were part of the moneyed and influential elite who controlled Haven. They were also, surprisingly, two of Blackstone's strongest supporters. Lord Roderick Hightower was a stocky, medium-height man in his early 50s. His short-cropped hair was iron-gray, and his piercing dark eyes stared unyieldingly from a harsh, weather-beaten face. Only a few years earlier, he'd been the chief commander of the Low Kingdom's army, and a legend in his own lifetime. He always led his men into battle, and he was always the last to retreat. Hightower's grasp of strategy was second to none, and he had guts of solid steel, a soldier's soldier. He was still solidly muscled, but signs of wear were finally beginning to show. He was getting slower, and old wounds gnawed at him when it rained. He retired from the army rather than accept the desk job they offered him, and immediately looked for a new challenge with which to occupy himself. He finally settled on politics and took on the campaign to clean up Haven with the same determination and gusto he showed in his army days. Hawk knew him from a year or so back. A series of werewolf murders terrorized the Lower North Side, and Hawk worked on the complicated, messy investigation. Hawk finally identified the shapechanger and destroyed it, but not before three more men had died. One of them was Hightower's only son. Hawk's superiors stood by him, but Hightower still blamed Hawk for his son's death.
More complications.
He looked curiously at Hightower's wife, the Lady Elaine. A very well-preserved early 50s, she wore the latest fashion with style and dignity. Her long dress flowed, despite the muggy weather, displaying decorative patterns of semi-precious stones. She fanned herself constantly with an intricately painted paper fan, but otherwise seemed unaffected by the heat. Lady Elaine's long mane of pure white hair showed to advantage. Her face had a strong bone structure. She was still stunningly good-looking, despite her years. All in all, she looked splendid, and she knew it. Lady Elaine held her husband's arm protectively and looked around Gaunt's parlor with such poise that she seemed to be suggesting that simply by entering such a room, she was most definitely slumming. Hawk felt an almost overwhelming urge to sneak up behind her and kick her in the bustle. Fisher leaned closer to Hawk.
Hightower, wasn't he the one who...
Yeah.
Maybe he's forgotten by now.
I doubt it.
Hightower looked across the room, saw Hawk and Fisher, and stiffened slightly. He spoke quietly to his wife, who looked at the two guards as though they'd just crawled out from under a rock. She reluctantly let go of her husband's arm and moved away to greet Blackstone. Lord Hightower glared at Hawk for a long moment, and then walked slowly across the length of the room to confront him. Hawk and Fisher bowed politely. Hightower didn't bow in return. He waited for Hawk to straighten up and then studied him coldly.
So, you're William's bodyguards?
That's right, my lord.
I should have had you drawn out of the guard when I had the chance.
You tried hard enough, my lord. Luckily, my superiors knew the facts of the matter. Your son's death was a tragic accident.
He'd still be alive if you'd done your job properly.
Perhaps. I did my best, my lord.
This is your woman, is it?
This is my partner and my wife, Captain Fisher.
And if you raise your voice to my husband again, I'll knock you flat on your ass, right here and now.
Hightower flushed angrily. Hightower looked into Fisher's steady eyes and saw that she meant it. The former soldier had a lifetime's experience of fighting men and knew without a shadow of a doubt that Fisher would kill him if she thought he was a threat to her husband. He recalled some of the things he'd heard about Hawk and Fisher, and suddenly they didn't seem quite so impossible after all.
Bah!
He turned his back on the two guards and walked back to his wife with as much dignity as he could muster.
How to make friends and influence people.
To hell with him. Anyone who wants to take you on has got to go through me first.
I knew there had to be some reason why I put up with you. I liked Hightower's son. He hadn't been in the guard long, but he meant well, and he tried so hard. He was just in the wrong place at the wrong time, and he died because of it.
What happened on that werewolf case? That's another one you never told me much about.
Not much to tell. The case started badly and went downhill fast. We didn't have much to go on, and what little we thought we knew about werewolves turned out to be mostly untrue. According to legend, the werewolf in human shape is excessively hairy, has two fingers the same length, and has a pentacle on his palm. Rubbish, all of it. Also, according to the legend, the man takes on his wolf shape when the full moon rises and only turns back again when the moon goes down. Our shape changer could turn from man to wolf and back again whenever he felt like it, as long as the full moon was up. That made finding him rather difficult. We got him eventually. Ordinary-looking guy. You could walk right past him in the street and never notice him. I killed him with a silver sword. He lay on the ground with the blood running out of him and cried, as though he couldn't understand why any of this was happening to him. He didn't want to kill anyone. The werewolf curse made him do it. He didn't want to die either. And at the end, he cried like a small child that's been punished and doesn't know why.
Fisher put an arm across his shoulders and hugged him.
How very touching.
Hawk and Fisher looked around to see Edward Bowman standing to their right, smiling sardonically. Fisher moved unhurriedly away from Hawk. Bowman put out his hand, and Hawk shook it warily. Like Blackstone, Bowman had a politician's quick and impersonal handshake. He shook Fisher's hand, too.
Enjoying the party?
He smiled impartially at Hawk and Fisher.
It has its ups and downs.
Ah, yes. I saw you in Hightower. Unfortunate business about his son. You'd do well to be wary of Hightower, Captain Hawk. Lord Roderick is well known for his ability to hold a grudge.
What's his connection with Blackstone? I'd have thought a man like Hightower, old army and high society, would be conservative by nature, rather than a reformer.
Normally you'd be right, and thereby hangs a tale. Up until a few years ago, Lord Roderick was a devoted advocate of the status quo. Change could only be for the worse, and those who actually lobbied for reforms were nothing but malcontents and traitors. Then, however, the king summoned Lord Hightower to court and told him it had been decided by the assembly that he was too old to lead the army anymore, and he would have to step down to make way for a younger man. According to my spies at court, Hightower just stood there and looked at the king like he couldn't believe his ears. Apparently, he hadn't thought the mandatory retirement from the field at 50 would apply to someone as important as he. The king was very polite about it. He even offered Hightower a position as his personal military advisor. But Hightower wouldn't have any of it. If he couldn't be a real soldier, he'd resign his commission. I don't think he really believed they'd go that far. Until they did. He was never the same after that. 30 years of his life given to the army, and he didn't even get a pension because he resigned. Not that he needed a pension, of course, but it was the principle of the thing. He came back here, to his home and his family, but he couldn't seem to settle down. Tried to offer his advice and expertise to the council, but they didn't want to know. I think he joined up with Blackstone originally, just to spite them. Told you he carried grudges. Then he discovered reform, and he's been unbearable ever since. There's no one more fanatical than a convert to a cause. Still, there's no denying he's been very useful to us. His name opens up quite a few doors in Haven.
It should. His family owns a fair chunk of it. And his wife's family is one of the oldest in the city. How did you get involved with Blackstone?
I liked his style. He was one of the few politicians I met who actually seemed interested in doing something to improve the lives of the people who live in this rat hole of a city. I've been in politics all my life. My father was a councillor to the day he died, but I hadn't been getting anywhere. It's not enough in politics to have a good mind and good intentions. You have to have a good personal image as well. I've never had much talent for being popular, but William has. I knew he was going places from the first day I met him, but at the time, he didn't have any experience. He threw away chances because he didn't even know they were there. So we decided to work together. I provided the experience, he provided the style. It hasn't worked out too badly. We get on well together, and we get things done.
And he gets all the power and all the credit.
I'm not ambitious, and there's more to life than credit.
Indeed, there is.
Catherine Blackstone moved in to stand beside Bowman, and Hawk and Fisher didn't miss the way they stood together. Catherine sipped daintily at her drink.
Tell me, where did you and your wife come from originally, Captain Hawk? I'm afraid I can't quite place your accent.
We're from the north. Up around Hillsdown.
Hillsdown? That's a monarchy, isn't it?
More or less.
The Low Kingdoms must seem rather strange to you. I don't suppose democracy has worked its way up north yet.
Not yet. The world's a big place and change travels slowly. When I discovered the Low Kingdoms were in fact governed by an elected assembly, presided over by a constitutional monarch with only limited powers, it was as though my whole world had been tipped upside down. How could he be king if he didn't rule? But the idea that every man and woman should have a say in how the country should be run? That was staggering. There's no denying the system does have its drawbacks. And I've seen most of them right here in Haven, but it has its attractions, too.
It's the way of the future.
You might just be right.
Gaunt went off to answer the doorbell. Bowman and Catherine moved away to talk quietly with each other. Fisher looked after them thoughtfully.
I don't trust Bowman. He smiles too much.
Well, that's his job. He's a politician, remember? But did you see the way Catherine's face lit up every time Bowman looked at her?
Yeah. There's definitely something going on there.
Scandal monger.
Not at all. I'm just romantic, that's all. Drink up.
Gaunt came back into the parlor with a tall, muscular man in his late 40s. Adam Stalker. Stalker was possibly the most renowned hero ever to come out of the Low Kingdoms. In his time, he'd fought every monster you can think of, and then some. He single-handedly toppled the evil Baron Cade from his mountain fortress and freed hundreds of prisoners from the foul dungeons under Cade's keep. He counseled kings and championed the oppressed. Stalker served in a dozen armies, in this cause and that, bringing aid and succor to those with none. His feats of daring and heroism even now spread across the known world, the subject of countless songs and stories. Adam Stalker, demon slayer and hero. The man stood a head and shoulders taller than anyone else in the room, and was almost twice as wide as some of them. His shoulder-length black hair was shot with gray now, but he was still an impressive and powerful figure. His clothes hung in a simple, elegant cut. Stalker looked around the room like a soldier gazing across a battlefield, nodding at the familiar faces. And then his cold blue eyes fell on Hawk and Fisher. He strode quickly over to them, crushed Hawk's hand in his, and clapped him on the back.
Ah, I heard about your run-in with the Chandler Lane vampire. You did a good job, Captain Hawk. A damn good job.
Thanks. My partner helped.
Of course. Well done, my dear.
Stalker looked back at Hawk.
I've heard good things about you, Hawk. This city has much to thank you for.
Yeah, we're thinking of putting in for a raise.
Thank you, Sir Warrior. We do our best, but I'm sure we've a long way to go before we become as renowned as Adam Stalker.
Stalker smiled and waved a hand dismissively.
Ah, minstrels exaggerate. I take it you're here as William's bodyguards. You shouldn't have any trouble, not with me and Gaunt to look after him. Still, I can always use a backup. I'll talk to you again later. I want to hear all about this vampire killing. I once stumbled across a whole nest of the things. Up in the Broken Crag Range. Nasty business.
He nodded quickly and strode off to speak to Blackstone. Hawk and Fisher watched him go.
Big, isn't he?
I'll say. He must be close to 7 feet tall. And did you see the size of those muscles?
Yeah. You were a bit short with him, weren't you?
He was a bit short with me. He's obviously one of those men who think women should stay at home while the men go out to be heroes. You ever meet him before, Hawk?
No, heard most of the songs, though. If only half of them are true, he's a remarkable man. I wasn't sure I believed some of the stories, but now I've met him. I don't know. He's certainly impressive.
Right.
Fisher sipped thoughtfully at her drink.
A very dangerous man, if crossed.
Hawk looked at her sharply.
Oh, come on. Stalker as an assassin? That's ridiculous. What reason could a great hero like Stalker possibly have for taking on a small-time politician like Blackstone? We're talking about a man who's supposed to have toppled kings in his time.
I don't know. He just strikes me as a little too good to be true. That's all.
You're just jealous because he congratulated me, and not you.
Aw. Maybe.
How many of those have you had?
Two or three. I'm thirsty.
Then ask for a glass of water. This is no time to be getting legless. Hightower would just love to find some reason to drop
You're
us
right.
into
the... Spoil sport.
Fisher put down her empty glass and looked about her. The party seemed to be livening up. The chatter of raised voices filled the parlor, along with a certain amount of self-satisfied laughter. Every hand held a wine glass, and the first few bottles were already empty. Hawk moved away to talk to Blackstone about the security arrangements, and Fisher was left on her own. She looked disinterestedly around her. Society gatherings didn't appeal to her much. Private jokes, malicious gossip, and sugary wines were no substitute for good food and ale in the company of friends. Not that she was particularly fond of that kind of gathering, either.
I guess I'm just basically antisocial.
She shrugged and smiled, and then stood up a little straighter as Edward Bowman came over to stand before her. She bowed politely, and he nodded briefly in return.
Captain Fisher, all alone?
For the moment.
Now that is unacceptable. A good-looking woman like yourself should never want for company.
Fisher raised a mental eyebrow. Her face was striking rather than pretty, and she knew it. Bowman must be after something.
I'm not very fond of company.
Don't much care for crowds myself. Oh, why don't we go somewhere more private, just the two of us?
No, I don't think Gaunt would like that. We are his guests. And after all, I'm here to do a job.
Gaunt won't say anything? No one will say anything. I'm an important man, my dear.
Fisher looked him straight in the eye.
You don't believe in wasting time, do you?
Life is short. Why are we still talking? There are so many other more pleasurable things we could be doing.
I don't think so.
What? I don't think you understand, my dear. No one turns me down. No one.
Want to bet?
You forget your place, Captain. I have friends among your superior officers. All I have to do is drop a word in the right quarter.
You'd really do that?
Believe it, Captain. I can ruin your career. Have you thrown in jail? You'd be surprised what can happen to you. Unless, of course...
He reached out a hand toward her face, and then stopped suddenly and looked down. Fisher had a dagger in her left hand, the point pressed against his stomach. Bowman stood very still.
Threat me again, and I'll cut a hole in you that you'll carry for the rest of your days. And be grateful my husband hasn't noticed anything. He'd kill you on the spot, and damn the consequences. Now go away, and stay away. Understood?
Bowman nodded jerkily, and Fisher made the dagger disappear. Bowman turned and walked away. Fisher leaned back against the buffet table and shook her head resignedly.
I think I preferred the party when it was boring.
Gaunt stood alone by the doorway, keeping a careful eye on the time. The first course would be ready soon, and he didn't want it to be overdone. The first course set the mood for the meal to come. He looked around at his guests, and then winced slightly as he saw Stalker making his way determinedly towards him. Gaunt bowed politely to Stalker. The giant warrior inclined his head briefly in response.
I'd like a word with you, Sir Sorcerer.
Of course, Adam. What can I do for you?
Sell me this house.
Gaunt shook his head firmly.
Adam, I've told you before, I'm not interested in selling. This house suits me very well, and I've spent a great deal of time investing both it and the grounds with my own magical protections. Moving now would be not only expensive and highly inconvenient, it would also mean at least 6 months' hard work removing those spells before anyone else could live here.
The money needn't be a problem. I'm a rich man these days. You can name your price, Sorcerer.
It's not a question of money, Adam. This house suits me. I'm quite happy here, and I don't want to move. Now, I hate to be ungracious about this, but there's really no point in your continuing to pester me about selling. Your gold doesn't tempt me in the least. I already have all I need. I don't see why this house is so important to you, Adam. There are others just like it scattered all over the city. Why are you so obsessed with mine?
Personal reasons. If you should happen to change your mind, perhaps you would give me the first refusal.
Of course, Adam. Now, while you're here, I'd like a word with you.
Yes?
What's happened between you and William? Have you quarreled?
No.
Stalker looked steadily at Gaunt.
Why do you ask?
Oh, come on, Adam, I'm not blind. I don't think the pair of you have exchanged two words you didn't have to in the last few weeks. I thought perhaps you'd had a falling out or something.
Not really. I'm here, aren't I? It was just a difference of opinion over what our next project should be. It'll work itself out. And now, if you'll excuse me...
He nodded stiffly to Gaunt and walked away. The sorcerer watched him go, his face carefully impassive. Something was wrong. He could feel it. Stalker might talk calmly enough, but the man was definitely on edge. Still, it wasn't likely he'd make any trouble. Not here. Not at William's party. Gaunt frowned. Just the same, perhaps he'd better have a word with Bowman. See if he knew anything. If something had happened to upset Stalker, he'd make a dangerous enemy. Lord and Lady Hightower stood together, a little apart from the rest of the guests. Lord Roderick looked out over the gathering, his eyes vague and far away. Lady Elaine put a gentle hand on his arm.
You look pale, my dear. Are you feeling all right?
I'm fine, really.
You don't look it.
It's the heat, that's all. I hate being trapped in the city during the summer. Damn place is like an oven, and there's never a breath of fresh air. I'll be all right, Elaine. Don't fuss.
I saw you talking to the guards. That is him, isn't it?
Yes. He let our boy die.
No rot. It wasn't that man Hawk's fault, and you know it. You can't go on blaming him for what happened. Do you blame yourself for every soldier under your command who died in battle because you didn't predict everything that could go wrong? Of course you don't.
This wasn't a soldier, it was our son.
Yes, Rod, I know.
I was so proud of him, Elaine. He wasn't going to waste his life fighting other people's battles. He was going to make something of his life. I was so proud of him.
I miss him as much as you do, my dear. But he's gone now, and we have to get on with our lives. And you've more important things to do than waste your time feuding with a captain of the city guard.
Lord Roderick looked at her properly for the first time. For a moment it seemed he was going to say something. And then he changed his mind. He looked down at her hand on his arm, and he put his hand on top of hers.
You're right, my dear, as usual. Just keep that man out of my sight. I don't want to have to talk to Captain Hawk again.
Stalker picked up one of the canapes and studied it dubiously. The small piece of meat rolled in pasta looked even smaller in his huge hand. He sniffed at it gingerly, shrugged, and ate it anyway. When you're out in the wilds for days on end, you can't ever be sure where your next meal's coming from. So you eat what you can when you can, or risk going hungry. Old habits die hard. Stalker looked about him, and his gaze fell on Graham Dorimant, talking with the witch Visage. Stalker's lip curled. Dorimant, political advisor. Probably never drew a sword in anger in his life. All mouth and no muscle. He had his uses, but... Stalker shook his head resignedly. These were the kinds of people he was going to have to deal with now that he'd entered the political arena. Stalker smiled suddenly. He thought life in the wilds was tough until he'd entered politics. These people would eat you alive given half a chance. And politics was going to have to be his life from now on. Stalker was getting too old for heroics. He didn't feel old, but he had to face the fact that he just wasn't as strong or as fast as he once was. Better to quit now while he was still ahead. He hadn't lasted this long by being stupid. Besides, politics had its own rewards and excitements. The pursuit of power. Long ago, when he was young and foolish, a princess of a far-off land offered to marry him and make him king, but he turned her down. He hadn't wanted to be tied down. Things were different now. He had money, and he had prestige. So what was there left to reach for except power? The last great game, the last challenge. He frowned suddenly. Everything had been going fine. He and William had been an unbeatable team until... Damn the man, if only he hadn't proved so stubborn. Still, there wouldn't be any more arguments after tonight. After tonight, he'd be free to go his own way, and to hell with William Blackstone. Stalker looked over at the young witch Visage and smiled slightly. Not bad looking. Not bad at all. Not quite to his usual taste, but there was a quiet innocence in her demure mouth and downcast eyes that appealed to him. It's your lucky night, my girl, he thought as he moved over to join her and Dorimant. They both bowed politely to him, but Stalker didn't miss the barely suppressed anger in Dorimant's eyes.
Good evening, sir, warrior. You honor us with your presence.
Good to see you again. Keeping busy, are you? Still digging up secrets and hauling skeletons out of the cupboards?
We all do what we're best at.
Stalker turned to Visage.
And how are you, my dear? You're looking very lovely.
Thank you.
Visage glanced at Stalker briefly and then lowered her eyes again.
Not drinking? Let me get you some wine.
Thank you, no. I don't care for wine. It interferes with my concentration.
But that's why we drink it, my child. Still, the alcohol in wine needn't always be a problem. Watch this.
Stalker poured himself a large glass of white wine from a handy decanter and then held up the glass before him.
Platako arasker fosh.
At the sound of his whisper, the wine stirred briefly in the glass, as though disturbed by an unseen presence. It quickly settled itself, and the wine looked no different than it had before.
Try it now.
He handed the glass to Visage.
All the taste of wine, but no alcohol.
Visage sipped the wine tentatively.
Good trick.
Stalker looked quickly around. He hadn't heard the guard approach. Getting old, he thought sourly, and careless. He bowed politely to Hawk.
A simple transformation spell. The wine doesn't change its basic nature, of course. That would be beyond my simple abilities. The alcohol is still there, it just can't affect you anymore. It's a handy trick to know, on occasion. There are times when a man's survival can rest on his ability to keep a clear head.
I can imagine. But I always thought you distrusted magic, Sir Warrior. That seems to be the one thing all the songs about you agree on.
Oh, them. I never wrote any of them. When you get right down to it, magic's a tool like any other, just a little more complicated than most. It's not that I distrust magic, I just don't trust those who rely on it too much. Sorcery isn't like a sword or a pike. Magic can let you down. And besides, I don't trust the deals some people make to gain their knowledge and power.
He looked at Gaunt on the far side of the room, and his eyes were very cold. Hawk looked thoughtfully at Stalker. Dormant and Visage looked at each other.
Thank you for the wine, Sir Warrior. It's really very nice. But now, if you'll excuse us, Graham and I need to discuss some business with the Hightowers.
And I must return to my partner.
They bowed politely and then moved quickly away, leaving Stalker standing alone, staring after Visage.
You rotten little bitch. Oh, well, she wasn't really my type anyway.
My friends, dinner will soon be ready. If you'd like to go up to your rooms and change, I will be serving the first course in 30 minutes.
The guests moved unhurriedly out of the parlor and into the hall, talking cheerfully among themselves. Gaunt disappeared after them, presumably to check on how the first course was coming along. Hawk and Fisher were left alone in the great parlor.
Change for dinner?
Of course. We're among the high-quality people now.
For a change.
I'm getting rid of this cloak. I don't care if we are representing the guard. It's too damn hot to wear a cloak.
She took it off and draped it carelessly over the nearest chair. Hawk grinned and did the same. They looked wistfully at the great table at the rear of the parlor, covered with a pristine white tablecloth and gleaming plates and cutlery. There was even a massive candelabrum in the middle of the table, with all the candles already lit.
That looks nice.
Very nice. I wonder if we're invited to dinner.
Well, I doubt it. We probably get scraps and leftovers in the kitchen afterwards. Unless Blackstone decides he wants a food taster, and I think Gaunt would probably take that as an insult to his culinary arts.
Oh, well, at least now we can sit down for a while. My feet are killing me.
Right, it's been a long day.
They walked over and drew up chairs by the empty fireplace, dropped into them, and stretched out their legs. The chairs were almost indecently comfortable and supportive. Hawk and Fisher sat in silence a while, almost dozing. The unrelenting muggy heat weighed down on them, making sleep seem very tempting. The minutes passed pleasantly. Catherine Blackstone came hurrying into the parlor, and Hawk sat up with a jolt as he saw the worry in her face.
I'm sorry to trouble you.
Not at all. We're here to help.
It's my husband. He went into our room to get changed while I paid a visit to the bathroom. When I came back, the door to our room was locked from the inside. I knocked and called, but there was no answer. I'm afraid he may have been taken ill or something.
Hawk and Fisher quickly got to their feet.
I think we'd better take a look, just in case. If you'd show us the way, please.
Catherine Blackstone nodded quickly and led them out of the parlor and into the hall. Hawk's hand rested on the axe at his side. He had a bad feeling about this. Catherine led them down the hall and up the stairs, at the far end, grabbing at the banisters as though to pull herself along faster. Hawk and Fisher had to push themselves to keep up with her. Catherine reached the top of the stairs first and ran down the landing to the third door on the left. She hammered on the door and rattled the doorknob, then looked worriedly at Hawk.
Oh, it's still locked, Captain. William! William, can you hear me?
There was no reply. Catherine stepped back and looked desperately at Hawk.
Use your axe. Smash the lock. I'll take the responsibility.
Hawk frowned as he drew his axe.
Perhaps we should talk to Gaunt first.
I'm not waiting. William could be ill in there. Break the door down now. That's an order, Captain.
Hawk nodded and took a good grip on his axe.
Stand back then and give me some room.
What the hell is going on here?
Gaunt approached from the top of the stairs.
Captain, put down your axe.
Hawk looked steadily at the sorcerer.
Counselor Blackstone doesn't answer our calls and his door is locked from the inside. Do you have a spare key?
Gaunt came forward to join him.
No, I've never needed any spares.
He looked at the closed door and his mouth tightened.
William could be hurt. Smash the lock.
Hawk nodded and swung his axe at the brass lock, using all his strength. The blade sank deep into the wood, and the keen edge bit into the brass. The heavy door shook violently in its frame, but didn't open. Hawk jerked the blade free and struck again. The axe sheared clean through the lock. He smiled slightly. It was a good axe. He kicked the door open, and he and Fisher hurried into the room with Catherine and Gaunt close behind. William Blackstone lay on his back on the floor, staring sightlessly at the ceiling. A knife hilt protruded from his chest, and his shirt front was red with blood. Catherine Blackstone pushed past Hawk and Fisher and ran forward to kneel beside her husband.
Oh, William!
Her hand went briefly to his chest and then to his face. She looked back at Hawk, and her face was blank and confused.
Oh, he's dead! He's really dead!
Fisher moved forward and knelt beside her for a moment before putting an arm around her shoulders and helping her to her feet. She led Catherine away from the body and made her sit down on the bed. Catherine accepted this docilely. Tears rolled down her face, but she made no attempt to wipe them away. Shock. Hawk had seen it before. He looked at Gaunt, standing beside him in the doorway. The sorcerer looked shaken and confused, unable to take in what had happened.
Gaunt, you're her friend. Get her out of here. Fisher and I have to examine the body.
Of course. I'm sorry. Of course.
And Gaunt?
Yes?
Take her downstairs, get somebody to sit with her, and then set up an isolation spell. I don't want anyone or anything getting in or out of this house.
Yes, I understand.
Gaunt led the dazed Catherine out of the room, and Hawk shut the door behind them. Hawk and Fisher looked at the dead body and then at each other.
Some bodyguards we turned out to be.
Oh, this is going to be a real mess, Hawk. Blackstone was the best thing to happen to this city in years. What's going to happen with him gone?
If we don't find out who killed him, and quickly, there'll be riots in the streets. Damn. I liked him, Isabel. He trusted us to keep him safe, and we let him down.
Come on, we've got work to do. I'll check the room, you check the body.
Hawk nodded and knelt down beside Blackstone. He looked the body over from head to toe, careful not to touch anything. Blackstone's face was calm and relaxed, the eyes open and staring at the ceiling. His hands were empty. One leg had buckled under him as if he fell back and was trapped beneath the other. The knife had been driven into his heart with such strength that the cross piece of the knife was flush with Blackstone's chest. Hawk looked at the weapon closely, but it seemed a perfectly ordinary knife. There were no other wounds on the body, or any sign that Blackstone tried to defend himself. The shirt around the knife was soaked with blood. Hawk frowned. With a wound like that, you'd expect a lot more blood.
Look at this.
Hawk looked up sharply. Fisher was crouched down beside the bed, staring at a wine glass lying on its side on the thick rug. There was a little red wine left in the glass, and a few drops had spilled out onto the rug. The crimson stains looked disturbingly like blood. Fisher dipped a finger into the wine in the glass and then lifted it to her mouth.
Don't. Could be poisoned.
Well, smells okay.
Leave it anyway until we've had a chance to check it.
Come on, Hawk. Why poison Blackstone and then stab him through the heart?
All right, I'll admit it's highly unlikely, but you never know. Wipe your fingers off thoroughly, okay?
Okay.
Fisher wiped her fingers on the bedspread and then moved over to crouch down beside Hawk. She stared glumly at the body and shook her head slowly.
Well, how do you see it happening?
The door was locked from the inside and Blackstone had the only key. At least, I assume he had it. I'll check in a minute to make sure. Anyway, I think we're fairly safe in assuming it wasn't suicide. First, he had everything to live for. Second, there had been threats on his life. And third, he'd have a hell of a hard job stabbing himself like that. Apart from anything else, the angle's all wrong. No, suicide is definitely out.
Right. So somebody got in here, stabbed Blackstone, and then left, leaving the door locked from the inside. Tricky. Could Blackstone have locked the door himself after he was stabbed?
No. With a wound like that, he must have died instantly.
Yeah. All right. Who could have killed Blackstone? It had to be one of the guests. A stranger would have had a hell of a time getting into Gaunt's house, and even if he had, Blackstone would have taken one look at him and yelled the place down. And since he was stabbed in the chest, he must have seen his attacker.
Right. So, if Blackstone saw whoever it was and didn't cry out, that can only mean he knew his attacker and didn't consider him a threat until it was too late.
Nasty.
Very.
I'd better make sure Gaunt set up the isolation spell. I don't want any of our guests disappearing before I have a chance to question them. You stay with the body. No one is to touch anything, right?
Right.
Hawk straightened up and stretched slowly.
You know, Isabel, this is going to be a complicated case. I can feel it in my bones.
He left Blackstone's room and went out onto the landing, pulling the door shut behind him. The guests were crowded together on the landing, waiting for him. Lord Hightower stepped forward to block Hawk's way.
You, guard, what's going on?
My lord?
Why have you smashed down William's door? Gaunt took Catherine away in tears, but he wouldn't tell us anything. Just said we weren't to go in the room. What's happened?
William Blackstone has been murdered.
The guests stared back at him, all of them apparently shocked and stunned.
I have instructed the sorcerer Gaunt to seal off the house. Have any of you seen or heard anything suspicious? Anything at all?
He saw a general shaking of heads, which was pretty much what Hawk had expected.
I have to talk to the sorcerer. My partner is guarding the body. I must ask you all not to enter Counselor Blackstone's room for any reason until the investigation into his death is over. I suggest you all go downstairs and wait in the parlor, and I'll fill you in on the details of what's happened as soon as I can.
He turned quickly away before they could start asking questions and hurried down the stairs to find Gaunt. Fisher moved slowly around Blackstone's room, looking for anything out of the ordinary. She'd tried all the obvious things, like looking in the wardrobe and under the bed, but so far the only clue to be found was the wine glass. She scowled. The trouble with searching for clues was that half the time you didn't know what you were looking for until you found it, and even then you couldn't be sure. She stood still in the middle of the room and looked about her. The color scheme was a little garish for her taste, but there was no denying that all the furniture and fittings were of the best possible quality. Nothing seemed to have been moved or in any way disturbed. Everything was as it should be. Fisher glanced down at Blackstone's body and scowled thoughtfully. The killer had to be one of the guests, but they were all supposed to be friends of the dead man. One of them must have had a motive. Find the motive, and you find the killer. Fisher sat down on the edge of the bed and methodically worked her way through the list of suspects again. Catherine Blackstone had looked to be very fond of Edward Bowman. Perhaps she'd grown tired of being married to a man 10 years older than herself and had decided to get rid of him so that she could take up with a younger man. Lord Hightower claimed to have joined with Blackstone because of the way he'd been treated by the city council, but that could have been just a cover, a way of getting close to Blackstone. And Lord Roderick was a military man. He'd know how to kill quickly and silently, but then again, why should he want to? Blackstone just wasn't that important outside of Haven. And then there was the death wound itself. It must have taken quite a bit of strength to ram the knife all the way home. A great deal of strength or desperation. Fisher shook her head. There was no point in making guesses at this stage. She didn't have enough evidence to go on yet. Fisher leapt to her feet, sword in hand, as Lord Hightower entered the room.
That's far enough, my lord.
Hightower glared at her coldly.
Watch your manners, girl. I'm here to take a look at the body.
I'm afraid I can't allow that, my lord.
You'll do as you're damn well told. I still have my rank as general.
And that doesn't count a damn with me. As the only guards present, Hawk and I have taken charge of the investigation. And at the scene of the crime, we are answerable only to our superior officers. That's city law, Lord Hightower. Now I'm afraid I must insist that you leave. I can't risk you accidentally destroying any evidence.
Hightower started forward and then stopped dead as Fisher raised her sword. He took in her calm, professional stance and the old scars that scored her muscular forearm. The sword point didn't waver and neither did her narrowed eyes. Hightower stared at her coldly and stepped back a pace.
You'll regret this, guard. I'll see to that.
He turned and left. Fisher lowered her sword. Some days you just shouldn't get out of bed. Downstairs, Hawk stood in the middle of the hall and looked around him, but there was no sign of Gaunt. Catherine Blackstone sat alone in the parlor. She held a glass of wine, but she wasn't drinking it. She just sat in a chair by the empty fireplace, staring at nothing. Hawk spun around, axe in hand, to see Gaunt stepping into the hall from the room opposite the parlor.
Where the hell have you been?
Just checking my defenses. I can assure you that apart from those I invited, no one has got in or out of this house before or since the murder. I'm now ready to set up the isolation spell. Are you sure you want to do this, Captain? Once the spell is established, this house and everyone in it will be sealed off from the outside world until dawn.
That's a good 7 hours.
Do it. I know these are important people, and they're not going to like being held here against their will, but I can't risk letting the killer escape. In the meantime, I really don't think we should leave Catherine on her own. I thought I told you to find someone to sit with her.
There wasn't time. I thought it was more important to check my defenses in case the assassin was still here. Believe me, Catherine will be perfectly all right on her own for a few minutes. I've given her a sedative of my own devising. It should help to stave off the shock.
It won't knock her out, will it? I'm going to have to ask her some questions in a while.
No, it's only a mild sedative. Now, if you've finished with me for the moment, I think I'd better set up the isolation spell. I still can't really believe that one of my guests murdered William. But I suppose I must.
Gaunt strode down the hall to stand before the closed front door. He stood motionless for a long time. The sound of it echoed loudly on the air, and Hawk clutched tightly at the shaft of his axe as Gaunt's hands began to glow with an eerie blue light. The atmosphere in the hall grew tense and brittle. Hawk could feel a pressure building on the air. Gaunt threw his arms up in the stance of summoning, and his hands glowed so brightly it hurt to look at them. His mouth moved soundlessly, his eyes squeezed shut as he concentrated.
Ugh.
Hawk winced as a juddering vibration ran suddenly through his bones, chattering his teeth. Hawk staggered as the floor shook beneath his feet and then grew still. The sound was suddenly gone. Hawk got his balance back and looked around him. Everything seemed to be normal again. The sorcerer walked back to join him. Hawk glanced quickly at Gaunt's hands, but they were no longer glowing.
The spell is set. It cannot be broken. So if there is a murderer in my house, we're trapped in here with him until first light. I do hope you know what you're doing, Captain Hawk.
There is a murderer, and I'll get him. Now let's go back upstairs. I want you to take another look at Blackstone's body.
Gaunt nodded briefly, and Hawk sheathed his axe and led the way back down the hall to the stairs. The guests had all assembled in the parlor, but Hawk didn't stop to talk to them. They could wait a while. He and Gaunt made their way up the stairs and onto the landing. Gaunt stopped before the door to Blackstone's room and looked hard at Hawk. He took in the scarred wood and shattered lock and shrugged. He looked away. Hawk pushed open the door and walked in, followed by Gaunt. Fisher looked up sharply and then put away her sword as she saw who it was. Hawk raised an eyebrow.
Any problems while I was gone?
Not really. I had to throw Lord Hightower out. He wanted to examine the body.
You threw him out?
Of course. We're in charge at the scene of a crime, always. That's Haven law. On such occasions, anyone refusing to obey a guard's lawful orders or failing to answer his questions is liable to a heavy fine or a stay in prison.
That sounded suspiciously like a threat.
Just trying to clarify the situation, Sir Sorcerer.
Gaunt nodded stiffly.
Of course. I'm sorry, I'm a little oversensitive at the moment. I'm rather upset. I suppose we all are. William's death is a great loss to us all.
Not to everyone it isn't. Somebody must have stood to gain by it. All we have to do is work out why, and then we should have our murderer. That's the theory, anyway.
I see.
Hawk frowned slightly. He'd been watching the sorcerer closely, and Gaunt's perpetual calmness was beginning to get on his nerves. The sorcerer might claim to be upset over his friend's death, but if he was doing a damn good job of hiding it. In fact, if William had been the close friend that Gaunt claimed him to be, the sorcerer was being suspiciously cool and collected. Then again, sorcerers weren't exactly famous for behaving normally. If they were normal, they wouldn't have become sorcerers in the first place.
Well, I'm here. What do you want of me, Captain Hawk?
I'm not really sure. I don't know that much about sorcery. Is there anything your magic can do to help us detect or recreate the events leading up to William's murder?
I'm afraid not. My magic isn't really suited to such work. You see, all sorcerers specialize in their own particular area of interest. Some deal with transformational magic, others with weather control, constructs and homunculi, spirits of the air and of the deep. We all start out with the same basic grounding in the four elements, but after that, the high magic takes many forms.
What is your specialization?
Alchemy, medicines and the like.
And poisons?
On occasion.
Gaunt looked at Hawk sharply.
Did you have any reason for such a question?
Possibly.
Hawk indicated the wine glass lying on the rug beside the bed.
Seems likely Blackstone was drinking from that glass just before he was attacked. Can you tell whether or not the wine had been poisoned?
I'll need a sample to test before I can be sure. But I can't tell you straight away whether the wine contained anything harmful. That's a simple spell.
He stretched out his left hand toward the wine glass.
Insonodondra vintagia.
A cold breeze seemed to blow suddenly through the room and then was gone. Gaunt shook his head and lowered his arm.
It's perfectly harmless.
He knelt down beside the glass, dipped his finger into the remaining dregs, and then sucked his finger clean.
One of my better wines. I'll run some checks in my laboratory just to be sure there isn't anything else in it, like a mild soporific. But I'm sure any spell would have detected even that. May I take the glass?
No, I'm afraid not. That has to stay where it is for the moment. We need it for evidence later on, but you're welcome to take a sample of the wine itself. Just don't disturb the glass.
Gaunt hesitated.
Captain Hawk, there's something else. Something unusual in this room.
Where?
I don't know, but it's definitely something magical.
Gaunt frowned and looked at Blackstone's body.
Perhaps William was carrying a protective charm of some kind.
Hawk looked at Fisher.
Have you searched the body?
Not yet. I was waiting for you to get back.
All right, let's take a look.
Hawk knelt down beside Blackstone's body. Hawk started with the jerkin pockets. He found two handkerchiefs, one badly in need of a wash, and a handful of loose change. He dumped both the handkerchiefs and the money beside the body, then tried the trouser pockets. Some more loose change, and a half dozen visiting cards. Hawk dumped them with his other finds. He thought a moment, and then carefully undid Blackstone's high collar. He nodded slowly as the stiff cloth fell away to reveal a silver chain around the dead man's neck. Using only his fingertips, Hawk pulled gently at the chain until the amulet it held came out from under the dead man's shirt. It was a bone amulet with a series of tiny runes etched deep into the bone. It was spotted with the dead man's blood. Hawk held it up so that Gaunt could see it.
Do you know what this is, Sir Sorcerer?
Yes, it's an amulet of protection. The Witch Visage made it for William. I tested it for her myself a few days ago to make sure it would work. It was designed to protect the wearer against magical attacks. Any spell aimed at William would have ceased to work in his vicinity. A very useful defense.
So curses and the like would have had no effect on him?
Not as long as he wore the amulet. Anything of a magical nature would cease to be magical once it came anywhere near William. It would become magical again once it had moved beyond the amulet's sphere of influence, of course.
Of course.
Hawk dropped the amulet onto Blackstone's chest.
How big a sphere of influence would such an amulet have?
No more than a few inches. It's not a very powerful amulet, but then it doesn't need to be.
So whatever else happens, we can safely assume that Counselor Blackstone wasn't killed by magic.
I don't see how he could have been.
Thank you, Sir Sorcerer. You've been very helpful. Perhaps you would now be so kind as to join your guests in the parlor. My partner and I will join you shortly.
Very well.
Gaunt looked from Hawk to Fisher and then settled on Hawk, his dark eyes steady and disconcertingly cold.
William was my friend. I don't think I've ever known a man I admired more. I'll do everything I can to help you find the man who killed him. I give you my word on it.
He nodded abruptly to them both, turned quickly on his heel, and left. Hawk sat down on the bed and stared moodily at the dead man. Fisher leaned lazily against the wall.
A very pretty exit speech.
Very. I hope he doesn't turn out to be the murderer. Trying to arrest a sorcerer as powerful as he's supposed to be might prove rather difficult, not to mention extremely dangerous. On the other hand, if he isn't our killer, we'd better find the man responsible before Gaunt does. At least with us, he'd live to stand trial.
Yeah.
Fisher leaned her head back against the wall and frowned thoughtfully at the ceiling.
Do we assume that Gaunt is right, and Blackstone wasn't killed by magic?
It's a simple choice. Either the amulet is what Gaunt said it is, or it isn't. If it is, Blackstone couldn't have been killed by magic. But if Gaunt was lying...
Unlikely. He must have known we'd check with Visage.
Unless they're working together.
Ugh, I hate conspiracies.
Yeah, and I hate it when there's magic involved. It complicates the hell out of a case.
Fisher started looking vaguely around.
Have you found the key yet?
Damn, knew I forgot something.
Hawk scowled down at the dead man.
It wasn't in his pockets.
He got to his feet and looked around him. He and Fisher moved back and forth around the room, but couldn't see anything that even looked like a key. Finally, they both got down on their hands and knees and started combing through the thick rugs with their fingers.
Here!
She clambered awkwardly to her feet, holding up a key she'd found by the door.
It must have been left in the keyhole and fell out when you smashed the lock.
Assuming that is the right key.
Oh, come on, Hawk. What are the odds on there happening to be another key lying on the floor by the door?
Sorry, Isabel. That's the trouble with cases like this. You start doubting everything. We'll show Gaunt the key and he can tell us for sure.
Why don't we just try it in the lock?
Because after what I did to that lock with my axe, no key would work in it.
Fisher glanced at the smashed lock and nodded reluctantly.
I see what you mean. Well, we'll ask Gaunt.
She slipped the key into her trouser pocket.
All right, let's try and recreate what happened here. Blackstone was stabbed with a knife. The door was locked from the inside. So how did the killer get in and out?
Teleport?
It's possible, I suppose, but a spell like that takes a lot of power and a hell of a lot of expertise. And the only person here who fits that description is...
Gaunt.
Visage wouldn't have the power, would she?
So far, this case has been nothing but questions with no trustworthy answers. This case is going to be a challenge. I hate challenges. We were better off with the vampire. At least we knew where we were with him.
Come on. Let's go down and face the crowd in the parlor. Maybe we can get some answers out of them.
We might, but I doubt it.
They left the room, and Hawk pulled the door shut behind him. It wouldn't stay closed. He looked at the splintered wood and the shattered lock and wasn't surprised.
You always were efficient. But if we can't lock the door, how are we going to keep people out?
Beats me. Ask them nicely. There's not a lot in the room in the way of real evidence, as far as I can tell. And any attempt to interfere with the scene of the crime would be a pretty good indication of guilt. So let's just leave the door open and see what happens.
I love it when you're devious.
They made their way down the stairs and into the parlor. Hawk and Fisher paused a moment in the doorway, taking in the waiting suspects. The sorcerer Gaunt stood at the rear of the room by the main table. His face was calm, but his eyes were dark and brooding. Catherine Blackstone still sat in her chair by the empty fireplace. Her eyes were red and puffy from crying. She looked tired, defeated. Bowman stood beside her. His face was calm and controlled, as always. Lord and Lady Hightower stood together by the buffet table. Their backs straight, their heads erect, they stood protectively close to each other. Hawk looked at Lady Elaine's hands. They were held tightly together, the knuckles white from the pressure, as though to stop them from trembling. Anger or fear? Not far away, Dorimant helped himself to another glass of the fruit cordial. His normally ruddy face was pale and strained, his hands unsteady. The witch Visage stood beside him. She looked lost and frightened and very young. As Hawk watched, Dorimant put his arm around the witch's shoulders. Visage leaned against him gratefully, as though all the strength had gone out of her. Adam Stalker stood alone in the middle of the room. He glared impatiently at Hawk and Fisher as they stood in the doorway.
Well, what's happened? And why have we been kept waiting all this time?
Counselor Blackstone is dead.
He waited a moment, but no one said anything. Hawk walked forward into the parlor with Fisher at his side. Stalker reluctantly gave way to allow them to take up the center position. Hawk looked slowly about him to be sure he had everyone's attention.
William Blackstone was stabbed to death in his room. So far, we have no clues as to the identity of the killer. At my request, the sorcerer Gaunt has sealed off the house with an isolation spell. No one can get in or out.
The guests stirred uneasily, but still nobody said anything. For a moment, Hawk thought Hightower might. His face had lost all its color, and his hands had clenched into fists. But the moment passed, and Hightower remained silent.
Now, as guards, my partner and I are required to question you each in turn to help build up a picture of what was happening at the time of the killing. In the meantime, of course, no one is to go near the body.
Wait a minute. Question us. Are you saying you think one of us is the killer?
Ridiculous! And I'm damned if I'm answering any questions from a jumped-up guard.
Refusal to assist us in our inquiries is in itself a crime. I'm sure you all know the penalties for obstructing the guard in the performance of their duty.
You wouldn't dare.
Wouldn't I?
Hawk locked eyes with Hightower, and Hightower was the first to look away. Stalker stepped forward.
I've had experience with murders before, Captain. If I can help in any way, you have only to ask.
Thank you, Sir Stalker. I'll bear that in mind.
He turned to Gaunt.
Sir Sorcerer, is there a room my partner and I can use to talk privately with your guests?
Of course, Captain. There's my library. It's just across the hall. This way.